Hegel, The Science of Logic, Chapter 3, Ratio or the Quantitative Relation. The infinity of quantum has been determined up to the point where it is the negative beyond of quantum, a beyond which quantum, however, has within it. This beyond is the qualitative moment in general, the infinite quantum, as the unity of the two moments of the quantitative and the qualitative determinateness. Is in the first instance ratio. In ratio, quantum no longer has a merely indifferent determinateness, but is qualitatively determined as simply referring to its beyond. It continues in its beyond, and this beyond is at first just another quantum. Essentially, however, the two do not refer to each other as external quanta, but each rather possesses its determinateness in this reference to the other. In this, in their otherness, they have thus returned into themselves. What each is, that it is in its other, the other constitutes the determinateness of each. The quantum's self-transcendence does not now mean, therefore, that quantum has simply changed either into some other or into its abstract other, into its abstract beyond, but that there is in the other, it has attained its determinateness in its other, which is an other quantum, it finds itself. The quality of quantum is conceptual determinateness, is its externality as such, and in ratio quantum is now posited as having its determinateness in this externality, in another quantum as being in its beyond what it is. It is quanta that stand to each other in the connection that has now come on the scene. This connection is itself also a magnitude. Quantum is not only in relation, but is itself posited as relation. It is a quantum as such that has the qualitative determinateness in itself. So as relation, as ratio, quantum gives expression to itself as self-enclosed totality and to its indifference to limit by containing the externality of its being determined in itself. In this externality, it is only referred back to itself and is thus infinite within. Ratio in general is 1. Direct ratio, in this the qualitative moment does not yet emerge explicitly as such in no other way except still as quantum, is quantum posited as having its determinateness in its externality. In itself, however, the quantitative relation is the contradiction of externality and self-reference, the persistence of quanta and their negation. Such a contradiction next sublates itself. 2. First, inasmuch as in indirect or inverse ratio the negation of each of the quanta is as such co-posited in the alteration of the other, and the variability of the direct ratio is itself posited. 3. In the ratio of powers, the unity, which in its difference refers back to itself, proves to be a simple self-production of the quantum. This qualitative moment itself, finally posited in a simple determination and as identical with the quantum, becomes measure. About the nature of the following ratios, much was anticipated in the preceding remarks concerning the infinity of quantity, that is, the qualitative moment in it. It only remains to analyze, therefore, the abstract concept of this ratio. A. The direct ratio. 1. In the ratio which, as immediate, is direct, the determinateness of each quantum lies in the reciprocal determinateness of the other. There is only one determinateness or limit of both, one which is itself a quantum, namely the exponent of the ratio. 2. The component is some quantum or other, however, in referring itself to itself in the otherness which it has within it, it is only a qualitative determined quantum, for its difference, its beyond and otherness, is in it. This difference in the quantum is the difference of unit and amount, the unit which is the being determined for itself, the amount which is the undifferent fluctuation of determinateness, the external indifference of quantum. Unit and amount were at first the moments of quantum. Now, in the ratio, in quantum as realized so far, each of its moments appears as a quantum on its own and as determinations of the existence of the quantum, as delimitations against the otherwise external indifferent determinateness of magnitude. The exponent is this difference as simple determinateness, that is, it has the meaning of both determinations immediately in it. First, it is a quantum and thus an amount. If the one side of the ratio which is taken as unit is expressed in a numerical one and has only the value of 1, then the other, the amount, is the quantum of the exponent itself. Second, it is simple determinateness as the qualitative moment of the sides of the ratio. When the quantum of the one side is determined, the other is also determined by the exponent, and it is a matter of total indifference how the first is determined. It no longer has any meaning as a quantum determined for itself, but can just as well be any other quantum without thereby altering the determinateness of the ratio, which rests solely on the exponent. The one side, which is taken as unit, always remains unit, however great it becomes, and the other, however great it too thereby becomes, must remain the same amount of that unit. 3. Accordingly, the two truly constitute only one quantum. The one side has only the value of unit with respect to the other, not of an amount, and the other only that of amount. According to their conceptual determinateness, therefore, they are themselves not complete quanta, but this incompleteness is in them a negation, and it is so not because of their general variability, according to which one of them, any of the two, can assume all possible magnitudes, but because they are so determined that as one is altered, the other is increased or decreased in corresponding measure. This means that, as indicated, only one of them, the unit, is altered as quantum. The other side, the amount, remains the same quantum of units, and the first side, too, retains the value of a unit, however much it is altered as quantum. Each side is thus only one of the two moments of quantum, and the self-subsistence, which is their proper characteristic, is in principle negated. In this qualitative combination, they are to be posited as negative with respect to each other. The exponent ought to be the complete quantum, since the determinations of both sides come together in it. But in fact, even as quotient, the exponent only has the value of amount or of unit. There is nothing available for determining which of the two sides of the relation would have to be taken as the unit or as the amount. If one side, quantum B, is measured against quantum A as unit, then the quotient C is the amount of such units. But if A is itself taken as amount, the quotient C is the unit which is required by the amount A for the quantum B. As exponent, therefore, this quotient is not posited for what it ought to be, namely the determinant of the ratio, or the ratio's qualitative unity. It is posited as such only to the extent that its value is that of the unity of the two moments, of unit and amount. And since these two sides as quanta are indeed present as they should be in the explicated quantum in the ratio, but at the same time have the value, which is specific to them as the size of the ratio, of being incomplete quanta and of counting only as one of those qualitative moments, they are to be posited with this negation qualifying them. Thus there arises a more real ratio, one more in accordance with its definition, one in which the exponent has the meaning of the product of the sides. In this determinateness, it is the inverse ratio. B. The inverse ratio. 1. The ratio as now before us is the sublated direct ratio. It was an immediate relation and therefore not yet truly determinate. Henceforth, the newly introduced determinateness gives the exponent the value of a product, the unity of unit and amount. In immediacy, as we have just seen, it was possible for the exponent to be indifferently taken as unit or amount. Moreover, it was only a quantum in general and therefore an amount by choice. One side was the unit, and this was to be taken as a numerical one with respect to which the other side would be a fixed amount and at the same time the exponent. The quality of the latter, therefore, was only that this quantum is taken as fixed, or rather, that the constant only has the meaning of quantum. Now, in the inverse ratio, the exponent is as quantum likewise immediate, a quantum or other which is assumed as fixed, but to the one of the other quantum in the ratio, this quantum is not a fixed amount. The ratio previously taken as fixed is now posited instead as alterable. If one other quantum is taken as the unit of the one side, the other side now no longer remains the same amount of units of the first side. In direct ratio, this unit is only the common element of both sides. As such, it continues into the other side. The amount itself, or the exponent, is by itself indifferent to the unit. But as the determinateness of the ratio now is, the amount as such alters relative to the unit with respect to which it makes up the other side of the ratio. Whenever another quantum is taken as the unit, that amount alters. Consequently, although the exponent is still only an immediate quantum and only arbitrarily assumed as fixed, it does not remain fixed in the side of the ratio. Rather, this side, and with it the direct ratio of the sides, is alterable. In the ratio now before us, the exponent as the determining quantum is thus posited as negative towards itself as a quantum of the ratio, and hence as qualitative as limit. The result is that the qualitative moment distinctly comes to the force for itself as against the quantitative moment. In the direct ratio, the alteration of the two sides is only the one alteration of the quantum from which the unity, which is the common element, is taken by as much. Therefore, as the one side is increased or decreased, so also is the other. The ratio itself is indifferent to this alteration and the alteration external to the ratio. In the indirect ratio, on the contrary, although still arbitrary according to the moment of quantitative indifference, the alteration is contained within the ratio, and its arbitrary quantitative extension is limited by the negative determinateness of the exponent as by a limit. 2. We must now consider this qualitative nature of the indirect ratio more closely, as it is realized, and sort out the entanglement of the affirmative and the negative moments that are contained in it. Quantum is posited as being quantum qualitatively, that is, as self-determining, as displaying its limit within it. Accordingly, first, it is an immediate magnitude as simple determinateness, it is the whole as existent, an affirmative quantum. But second, this immediate determinateness is at the same time limit. For that purpose, it is distinguished into two quanta which are at first the other of each other. But as the qualitative determinateness of these quanta, and as a determinateness which is moreover complete, quantum is the unity of the unit and the amount, a product of which the two are the factors. Thus, on the one hand, the exponent of the ratio is in them identical with itself and is their affirmative moment by which they are quanta. On the other hand, as the negation posited in them, it is in them the unity according to which each, at first an immediate and limited quantum in general, is at the same time so limited as to be only implicitly in itself identical with its other. Third, the exponent as the simple determinateness is the negative unity of this differentiation of it into the two quanta, and the limit of their reciprocal limiting. In accordance with these determinations, the two moments limit themselves inside the exponent, and each is the negative of the other, for the exponent is their determinate unity. The one moment becomes as many times smaller as the other becomes greater. Each possesses a magnitude of its own to the extent that this magnitude is in it that of each other, of that of their other, that is the magnitude that the other lacks. The magnitude of each in this way continues into the other negatively. How much it is in amount, that much it sublates in the other as amount, and is what it is only through this negation or limit which is posited in it by the other. In this way, each contains the other as well and is proportioned to it. For each is supposed to be only that quantum which the other is not. The magnitude of the other is indispensable to the value of each and therefore inseparable from it. This continuity of each in the other constitutes the moment of unity through which the two magnitudes stand in relation, the moment of the one determinateness of the simple limit which is the exponent. This unity, the whole, constitutes the in itself of each from which their given magnitude is distinct. This is the magnitude according to which each is only to the extent that it takes from the other a part of their common in itself, which is the whole. But each can take from the other only as much as will make it equal to this in itself. It has its maximum in the exponent, which, in accordance with the stated second determination, is the limit of the reciprocal delimitation. And since each is a moment of the ratio only to the extent that it limits the other and is thereby limited by it, it loses this, its determination, by making itself equal to its in itselfness. In this loss, the other magnitude will not only become a zero, but itself vanishes, for what it ought to be is not just a quantum, but what it is as such a quantum, namely only the moment of a ratio. Thus each side is the contradiction between the determination as it's in itself, that is, as the unity of the whole which is the exponent, and the determination as the moment of a ratio. This contradiction is infinity again, in a new form peculiar to it. The exponent is the limit of the sides of its ratio, within which limit the sides increase and decrease proportionately to each other, but they cannot become equal to this exponent because of the latter's affirmative determinateness as quantum. Thus, as the limit of the reciprocal limiting, the exponent is A, their beyond which they infinitely approximate but can never attain. This infinity in which the sides approximate their beyond is the bad infinity of the infinite progression. It is an infinity which is itself finite, that finds its restriction in its opposite, in the finitude of each side and of the exponent itself, and for this reason is only an approximation. But B, the bad infinite is equally posited here as what it is in truth, namely the negative moment in general, in accordance with which the exponent is the simple limit as against the distinct quanta of the ratio. It is the in itself to which, as the absolutely alterable, the finitude of the quanta is referred, but which, as the quanta's negation, remains absolutely different from them. This infinite, which the quanta can only approximate, is then equally found affirmatively present on their side. The simple quantum of the exponent. In it is attained the beyond with which the sides of the ratio are burdened. It is in itself the unity of the two, or consequently in itself the other side of each side, for each side has only as much value as the other does not have. Its whole determinateness thus rests in the other, and this there being in itself is as affirmative infinity simply the exponent. 3. With this, however, we have the transition of the inverse ratio into a determination other than the one it had at first. This consisted in the fact that the quantum is immediate, but at the same time so connected to an other that the greater it is, the smaller is the other, that it is what it is by virtue of negatively relating to the other. Also, a third magnitude is the common restriction on this alteration in magnitude that the two quanta undergo. This reciprocal alteration, as contrasted to the fixed qualitative limit, is here their distinctive property. They have the determination of alterable magnitudes, for which that fixed limit is an infinite beyond. But the determinations that have emerged and which we now have to sum up are not only that this infinite beyond is at the same time some present finite quantum or other, but that its fixity, which makes it with respect to the quantitative moment the infinite beyond that it is, and which is the qualitative moment of being only as abstract self-reference, has developed itself as a mediation of itself with itself in its other, the finite moments of the relation. The general point is that the whole is as such the limit of the reciprocal limiting of the two terms, and that the negation of the negation, and consequently infinity, the affirmative self-relation, is therefore posited. The more particular point is that, as product, the exponent already implicitly is already the unit of unit and amount, whereas each of these two terms is only one of two moments, and for this reason the exponent encloses them in itself, and in them it implicitly refers itself to itself. But in the inverse ratio, the difference has developed into the externality of quantitative being, and the qualitative being is not only something fixed, nor does it simply enclose the two moments of the ratio immediately in it, but in the externally existent otherness it rejoins itself. It is this determination that stands out as a result in the moments we have seen. The exponent, namely, is found to be the implicit being whose moments are realized in quanta and in their generalized alterability. The indifference of the magnitudes of these moments in the course of their alteration displays itself as an infinite progression, the basis of which is that in their indifference their determinateness is to have their value each in the value of the other. Thus, A, according to the affirmative side of their quantum, the determinateness of the moments is that each is in itself the whole of the exponent. Equally, B, they have the magnitude of the exponent for their negative moment, for their reciprocal limiting. Their limit is that of the exponent. The fact that such moments do not have any other immanent limit, any fixed immediacy, is posited in the infinite progression of their existence and in their limitation, in the negation of every particular value. This is, accordingly, the negation of the externality of the exponent which is displayed in them, and the exponent, itself equally a quantum as such and also expanded into quanta, is thereby posited as preserving itself in the negation of the indifferent subsistence of the moments, as rejoining itself and thus as the determining factor in this movement of self-surpassing. The ratio is hereby determined as the ratio of powers. C. The ratio of powers. 1. Quantum in position itself as self-identical in its otherness and in determining its own movement of self-surpassing has come to be a being for itself, as such a qualitative totality, in positing itself as developed. It has for its moments the conceptual determinations of number, the unit and the amount. This last amount is in the inverse ratio still an aggregate which is not determined as amount by the unit itself, but from elsewhere, by a third determinate aggregate. But now it is posited as determined only by the unit. This is the case in the ratio of powers, where the unit which in it is amount is at the same time the amount as against itself as unit. The otherness, the amount of units, is the unit itself. The power is an aggregate of units, each of which is the aggregate itself. The quantum as indifferent determinateness changes, but inasmuch as the alteration is the raising to a power, the otherness of the quantum is determined purely by itself. The quantum is thus posited in the power as having returned into itself. It is immediately itself and also its otherness. The exponent of this ratio is no longer an immediate quantum as in the direct ratio and also in the inverse ratio. In the ratio of powers, the exponent is of an entirely qualitative nature. It is this simple determinateness that the amount is the unit itself, that the quantum is self-identical in its otherness. And the site of its quantitative nature is to be found in this, that the limit or negation is not an immediate existent, but that existence is posited rather as continuing in its otherness. For the truth of quality is precisely to be quantity, or immediate determinateness as sublated. 2. The ratio of powers appears at first as an external alteration to which a given quantum is subjected, but it has a closer connection with the concept of quantum, namely that in the existence into which the quantum has developed in the ratio of powers, quantum has attained that concept, has realized its concept to the fullest. The ratio of powers is the display of what the quantum is implicitly in itself. It expresses its determinateness of quantum, or the quality by which it is distinguished from another. Quantum is indifferent determinateness posited as sublated. That is to say, determinateness as limit, one which is just as much no determinateness, which continues in its otherness and in it, therefore remains identical with itself. Thus is quantum posited in the ratio of powers, its otherness, the surpassing of itself in another quantum, as determined through the quantum itself. If we compare the progressive realization of quantum in the preceding ratios, we find that quantum's quality of being the difference of itself from itself is simply this, that it is a ratio. As the direct ratio, quantum is this posited difference only in the first instance or immediately, so that the self-reference which it has as exponent, in contrast to its differences, counts only as the fixity of an amount of the unit. In the inverse ratio, as negatively determined, quantum is a relating of itself to itself, as to its negation, in which, however, it has its value. As an affirmative self-reference, it is an exponent which, as quantum, is only implicitly in itself the determinant of its moments. But in the ratio of powers, quantum is present in the difference as a difference of itself from itself. This externality of determinateness is the quality of quantum and is thus posited in conformity to the concept of quantum as quantum's own determining, as its reference to itself, its quality. 3. By being thus posited as it is in conformity to its concept, quantum has passed over into one other determination. Or, as we can also say, its determination is now also the determinateness, the in itself also as existence. It is quantum insofar as the externality or the indifference of its determining, as we say, it is that which can be increased or decreased, is simply accepted and immediately posited. It has become the other of itself, namely quality, insofar as that same externality is now posited as mediated by quantum itself and hence as a moment of quantum, so that in that very externality quantum refers itself to itself as being as quality. At first, quantity as such thus appears in opposition to quality, but quantity is itself a quality, self-referring determinateness as such, distinct from the determinateness which is its other, from quality as such. Except that quantity is not only a quality, but the truth of quality itself is quantity, and quality has demonstrated itself as passing over into it. Quantity, in its truth, is instead the externality which has returned into itself, which is no longer indifferent. Thus is quantity quality itself in such a way that outside this determination quality as such would yet not be anything at all. For the totality to be posited, a double transition is required, not only the transition of one determinateness into the other, but equally the transition of this other into the first, its going back into it. Through the first transition, the identity of the two is present at first only in itself. Quality is contained in quantity, but the latter still is only a one-sided determinateness. Conversely, that quantity is equally contained in quality, that is equally also only as sublated, this results in the second transition, the going back into the first determinateness. This remark regarding the necessity of the double transition is everywhere of great importance for scientific method. Quantum is henceforth no longer an indifferent or external determination, but is sublated as such, and it is a quality, and that by virtue of which anything is what it is, the truth of quantum is to be measured. Remark. We explained above in the remarks concerning the quantitative infinite that the difficulties associated with it have their origin in the qualitative moment that asserts itself in the sphere of the quantitative. We also explained how it is the qualitative moment of the ratio of powers which is particularly involved in the multitude of new starts and false starts. And we showed that the failure which chiefly stands in the way of a grasp of the concept of this infinite is that one stops short at just its negative determination as the negation of quantum, and fails to proceed to its simple affirmative determination as qualitative. We have only one more remark left to make. It concerns the intrusion of quantitative forms into the pure qualitative forms of thought that has occurred in philosophy. The ratio of powers especially has recently been applied to conceptual determinations. Thus the concept has been called the first power in its immediacy, the second power in its otherness or difference in the existence of its moments, and the third power in its turning back to itself or as totality. It immediately occurs against this usage that power, as so used, is a category that essentially belongs to quantum and has no conceptual connection to the potentia. Vinami sigma of Aristotle. The ratio of powers indeed expresses determinateness in the truth that it has attained as difference, but difference as found in the particular concept of quantum, not as it is in the concept as such. Quantum contains the negativity that belongs to the nature of the concept, but not as in any way already posited in the determination which is specific to it. So far as the concept is concerned, the differences of quantum are superficial determinations. They are still far from being determined as they are in the concept. It was in the infancy of philosophical thinking that numbers were used, as by Pythagoras, to designate universal essential differences, and for this purpose first power, second power, etc. have no advantage over numbers. This was a preliminary stage in the process of comprehension by pure thought. Only after Pythagoras were the determinations of thought themselves discovered, that is, they were explicitly brought to consciousness. But to step back in this process to number determinations is the symptom of a thought that senses its incapacity and, in an effort to stand up to the contemporary philosophical culture, which is accustomed to thought determinations, now adds the comedy of pretending that its weakness is something new and superior, a step forward. There is nothing much to be said against the symbolic use of the language of power, no more than there is against the use of numbers or any other kind of symbols for concepts. But there is also everything to be said against it, as there is against any system of symbols that pretends to convey pure conceptual or philosophical determinations. Philosophy has no need of any such aid, either from the world of the senses or from the representations of the imagination, or also from the spheres which belong to its own realm but are subordinated and whose determinations are therefore unsuited to higher circles and to the whole. This last is universally the case when the categories of finitude are applied to the infinite. The common determinations of force or substantiality, cause and effect, and so on, are likewise only symbols when expressing, for instance, living or spiritual relations. That is, they are to them untrue determinations, and all the less true to them, or to speculative relations in general, are the quantum powers or the numerical powers. If one is to use numbers, powers, the mathematical infinite, and the like, not as symbols, but as forms of philosophical determinations, and consequently as themselves philosophical forms, then one must start by defining their philosophical meaning, that is, their conceptual determinateness. But the moment this is done, they become superfluous designations, for the determinateness of the concept is its own designation, and this alone is the one which is both correct and fitting. The use of those forms is therefore nothing more than a convenient means for sparing oneself the task of grasping the determinations of the concept, of specifying and justifying them. Section 3. Measure. Abstractly expressed, quality and quantity are in measure united. Being as such is the immediate equality of determinateness with itself. This immediacy of determinateness has sublated itself. Quantity is being that has returned to itself in such a way that it is a simple self-equality indifferent to determinateness. But this indifference is only the externality of having the determinateness not in itself but in another. As third, we now have the externality that refers itself to itself. As self-reference, it is at the same time sublated externality and carries the difference from itself in it, a difference which as externality is the quantitative moment and as taken back into itself the qualitative. Since among the categories of transcendental idealism, modality comes after quantity and quality, with relation inserted in between, this is an appropriate place to say something about it. In transcendental idealism, this category has the meaning that it is the connection of the subject matter to thought. As understood by that idealism, thought is as such essentially external to the thing in itself. Hence, inasmuch as the other categories have the transcendental determination of belonging only to consciousness, but as its objective moments, so modality, which is the category of the connection to the subject, possesses the determination of reflection in itself in a relative sense. That is to say, the objectivity which is granted to the other categories is lacking in those of modality. These, according to Kant's words, do not add in the least to the concept as a determination of the object, but only express its relation to the faculty of cognition. The categories which Kant groups under modality, possibility, actuality, and necessity will come up later in their proper place. Kant did not apply the form of triplicity, an infinitely important form, even though with him it occurred only as a formal spark of light, to the genera of his categories, to quantity, quality, etc., but only to their species, to which he also gave the name of genera. He was therefore unable to hit upon the third, to quality and quantity. With Spinoza, the mode is likewise the third after substance and attribute. Spinoza defines it as the affections of substance, or as that which is in another through which it is also comprehended. In this way of conceiving it, this third is externality as such. As has already been mentioned, with Spinoza generally, the rigidity of substance lags the turning back into itself. The remark just made extends to any of the systems of pantheism which thought has in one way or other produced. Being the one substance, the infinite essence, is the first. Opposite this abstraction is the second, which can be mustered in an equally abstract form, as is habitually done as the next step in any purely formalistic thinking, namely all determinateness generally taken as the mere finite, the mere accidental, the transitory, the extraneous and unessential, etc. But the bond connecting this second with the first is too invasive for the second not to be not equally grasped with the first. Thus with Spinoza, the attribute is the whole of substance, though as comprehended by the understanding, which is itself a restriction of substance or mode. And so the mode, the insubstantial as such, which can be grasped only through another, constitutes the opposite extreme of substance, the third. Also, Indian pantheism, taken abstractly, has attained in its monstrous fantasies this refinement which runs like a moderating thread across its excesses as its one point of interest, namely that Brahma, the one of abstract thought, progresses through the shape of Vishnu, particularly in the form of Krishna, to the third, Shiva. The determination of this third is that of mode, alteration, coming to be and passing away. It is the field of externality in general. This Indian trinity has tempted a comparison with the Christian, and one must indeed acknowledge a common element in them. But it is essential to be aware of the difference that separates them. It is not just that this difference is infinite, but that the true infinity makes the difference. The determination of the Indian third principle is that it is the dispersal of the substantial unity into its opposite, not its turning back into itself. A spiritual void, rather, not spirit. In the true Trinity there is not only unity but unification. The syllogism is brought to a unity which is full of content and actual, a unity which in its totally concrete determination is spirit. The principle of the mode and of alteration does not, of course, exclude unity altogether. In Spinozism, for instance, precisely the mode is as such untrue, while substance alone is what truly is. Everything is supposed to be reduced to substance, and this is then a sinking of all content into an only formal unity void of content. As for Shiva, it too is again the great whole, not distinct from Brahma. From Brahma itself, that is, the distinction and the determinateness just disappear without being preserved, without being sublated, and the unity does not become concrete unity, nor is the diremption reconciled. The supreme goal of the human being, relegated as he is to the sphere of the coming to be and passing away of modality in general, is to sink into unconsciousness, into unity with Brahma, annihilation. The Buddhist nirvana, nibbana, etc. is the same. Now, although the mode is as such abstract externality, in difference to qualitative as well as quantitative determinations, and nothing in the essence should depend on the external, the unessential, it is nevertheless conceded that in the many all depends on the how, that this is to concede that the mode itself essentially belongs to the substance of a thing, a very indefinite connection, but one which at least implies that the externality of the mode is not all that abstract an externality after all. Here the mode has the definite meaning of being measure. The Spinozistic mode, just like the Indian principle of alteration, is the measureless. The Greeks were aware that everything has a measure. Parmenides himself introduces necessity after abstract being as the ancient limit which is imposed on all. And this awareness, although still vague, is the beginning of a much higher concept than is contained in substance and in the distinction of the mode from it. Measure, in its more developed, more reflected form, is necessity. Fate, nemesis, ultimately comes down to a determination of measure. Whatever renders itself beyond the pale, becomes too great, too high, is brought down to the other extreme of being reduced to nothing, so that the mean of measure, the medium, is restored. That the absolute God is the measure of all things is not a stronger statement of pantheism than the definition the absolute God is being, but is infinitely truer. Measure is indeed an external way of things, a more or less, but one which is at the same time reflected into itself, not merely an indifferent and external determinateness, but one which exists in itself. Thus it is the concrete truth of being. For this reason the nations have referred in it the presence of something inviolable and sacred. Already present in measure is the idea of essence, namely of being self-identical in the immediacy of being determined, so that this immediacy is reduced through the self-identity to something mediated, just as the self-identity is equally mediated only through this externality, but the mediation is one with itself. This is reflection, the moments of which indeed are, but in this being are absolutely nothing but moments of their negative unity. In measure, the qualitative element is quantitative, the determinateness or the difference is indifferent and therefore a difference which is none. It is sublated and this quantitativeness as an immanent turning back in which it is qualitative constitutes the being in and for itself which is essence. But measure is essence only implicitly in itself or in its concept. This concept of measure is not yet posited. Measure is as such still the existent unity of the qualitative and the quantitative element. Its moments are an existence, a quality, and some quanta of this quality which, in themselves, are indeed only indivisible, but do not yet have the meaning of this reflected determination. In the development of measure, these moments are differentiated but at the same time referred to each other, so that the identity which they are in themselves becomes their connection explicitly, that is posited. The meaning of this development is the realization of measure in which the latter posits itself in relation to itself and consequently as moment as well. Through this mediation, measure is determined as sublated. Its immediacy as well as that of its moments disappears. These moments are reflected and thus measure, having disclosed what it is according to its concept, has passed over into essence. Measure is at first the immediate unity of the qualitative and the quantitative element, so that it is, first, a quantum that has qualitative meaning and is as measure, as so implicitly determined in itself, its further determination is that the difference of its moments, of its qualitatively and quantitatively determined being, is disclosed in it. These moments further determine themselves into wholes of measure which as such are self-subsistent, and inasmuch as they refer to each other essentially, measure becomes, second, a ratio of specific quanta, each an independent measure. But their self-subsistence also rests essentially on a quantitative relation and a difference of magnitude, and so the self-subsistence becomes a transition of one measure into another. The result is that measure collapses into the measureless, but this beyond of measure is the negativity of measure only in itself. Thus, third, the indifference of the determinations of measure is thereby posited, and measure, real measure because of the negativity contained within it, is posited as an inverse ratio of measures which, as self-subsistent qualities, essentially rest on only their quantity and their negative reference to each other, and consequently prove to be only moments of their truly self-subsistent unity. This unity is the reflection into itself of each and the positing of them. It is essence. The development of measure, which we have attempted in what follows, is among the most difficult of subject matters. Starting with immediate external measure, it would have to proceed, on the one hand, to the further abstract determination of the quantitative aspect of natural things, of a mathematics of nature. On the other side, it would have to indicate the link between this determination of measure and the qualitative aspect of those things, at least in general, for the detailed demonstration of the link between the qualitative and the quantitative aspects as they originate in the concept of a concrete object belongs to the particular science of the concrete, examples of which concerning the law of falling bodies and the free movement of the heavens will be found in the Encyclopedia of the Philosophical Sciences. We may remark quite in general in this connection that the different forms in which measure is realized also belong to different spheres of natural reality. The complete abstract indifference of developed measure, that is, of its laws, can only be found in the sphere of mechanism where concrete corporeity is only abstract matter itself. The qualitative differences of this matter are of an essentially quantitative nature. Space and time are nothing but pure externalities, and the aggregates of matters, the masses, the intensity of weight, are determinations which are just as external and have their proper determinateness in the quantitative element. On the other hand, in physical things, but even more so in the organic, this quantitative determinateness of abstract materiality is already disturbed by the multiplicity and consequently the conflict of qualities, and the thus ensuing conflict is not just one of qualities as such, but measure itself is subordinated here to higher relations, and its imminent development is reduced rather to the simple form of immediate measure. The limbs of the animal organism have a measure which, as a simple quantum, stands in a ratio to the other quanta of the other limbs. The proportions of the human body are the fixed ratios of such quanta, and the science of nature still has far to go in discovering anything about the link that connects these magnitudes with the organic functions on which they are entirely dependent. But the closest example of the reduction of an imminent measure to a merely externally determined magnitude is motion. In the heavenly bodies, motion is free motion, one which is only determined by the concept from which alone, consequently, its magnitudes equally depend, see above, but in the organic body this free motion is reduced to one which is arbitrary or mechanically regular, that is, to one which is totally abstract and formal. And in the realm of spirit there is even less of a characteristic free development of measure to be found. For instance, it is obvious that a republican constitution like the Athenian or an aristocratic constitution mixed with democracy is possible only in a state of a certain size. It is also obvious that in civil society the multitudes of individuals who belong to the different occupations stand in a certain ratio to each other, but none of this yields either laws of measures or typical forms of it. In the spiritual realm, as such, there are indeed distinctions of intensity of character, strength of imagination, sensations, representations, and so on. But in determining them, one cannot go past this infinite duo of strength and weakness. To see how lame and totally empty ultimately turn out to be the so-called laws which have been established for the relation of strength and weakness in sensations, representations, and so on, one need only look at the psychologies that busy themselves with just such matters. Chapter 1. Specific quantity. Qualitative quantity is, first, an immediate specific quantum, and this quantum, second, in relating itself to another, becomes a quantitative specifying, a sublating of the indifferent quantum. This measure is to this extent a rule and contains the two moments of measure as different, namely the quantitative determinateness and the external quantum as existing in themselves. In this difference, however, the two sides become qualities, and the rule becomes a relation of the two. Measure presents itself thereby. Third, as a relation of qualities that have one single measure at first, a measure, however, which further specifies itself in itself into a difference of measures. A. The specific quantum. 1. Measure is the simple self-reference of quantum, its own determinateness in itself. Quantum is thus qualitative. At first, as an immediate measure, it is an immediate quantum and hence some specific quantum. Equally immediate is the quality that belongs to it. It is some specific quality or other. Thus quantum, as this no longer indifferent limit but as self-referring externality, is itself quality and, although distinguished from it, it does not extend past it, just as quality does not extend past quantum. Quantum is thus the determinateness that has returned into simple self-quality, simple self-equality, which is at one with determinate existence, just as determinate existence is at one with it. If a proposition is to be made of the determination just obtained, it could be expressed thus. Whatever is has a measure. Every existence has a magnitude, and this magnitude belongs to the very nature of a something. It constitutes its determinate nature and it's in itself. The something is not indifferent to this magnitude, as if were the latter to alter, it would remain the same. Rather, the alteration of the magnitude alters its quality. As measure, the quantum has ceased to be a limit which is none. It is from now on the determination of a thing, so that were the latter to exceed or fall short of this quantum, it would perish. A measure, in the usual sense of a standard, is a quantum which is arbitrarily assumed as the unit determinate in itself as against an external amount. Of course, such a unit can in fact also be determinate in itself, like a foot or some such other original measure. To the extent, however, that it is used as the measuring standard for other things, it is with respect to them only an external measure, not their original measure. Thus the diameter of the earth or the length of a pendulum may be taken as a specific quantum on their own account, but the choice of a fraction of the earth's diameter or of the pendulum's length, and this last under which degree of latitude, for use as a standard of measure is arbitrary. And for other things such a standard is something even more external. These have further specified the universal specific quantum in some particular way, and they have thereby been made into particular things. It is therefore foolish to speak of a natural standard of things. Anyway, a universal standard is meant for use only as an external comparison of things, and in this superficial sense of universal standard, it is quite a matter of indifference what is used for the purpose. It is not meant to be a fundamental measure in the sense that in it the natural measures of particular things would be displayed and recognized, according to a rule as the specifications of one universal measure, the measure of the thing's universal body. But without this meaning, the sole interest and significance of an absolute standard of measure is that of something common. And any such standard is a universal not in itself, but only by convention. Immediate measure is a simple determination of magnitude as, for example, the size of organic beings, of their limbs, and so forth. But any concrete existent has the size required for being what it is, and for having existence in the first place. As a quantum, the existent is an indifferent magnitude open to external determination and capable of fluctuating increases and decreases. As a measure, however, it is at the same time distinct from itself as quantum, itself as such an indifferent determination, and is a restriction on that indifferent fluctuation of a limit. Since in the existence of anything the quantitative determinateness is thus twofold, in the sense that quality is tied to it and yet the quantity can fluctuate without prejudice to quality. So the demise of anything that has a measure occurs through the alteration of its quantum. On the one hand, the demise appears unexpected inasmuch as there can be alteration in the quantum without the measure and the quality being altered, but on the other hand, it is made into something quite simple to grasp by means, namely, of the concept of gradualness. It is easy to turn to this category for visualizing or explaining the disappearance of a quality or of a something, for it gives the impression that one can witness this disappearance as if before one's eyes, since the quantum is posited as the external limit which is by nature alterable, the alteration of quantum only then follows by itself. But in fact nothing is thereby explained, for the alteration is at the same time essentially the transition of one quality into another, or the more abstract transition of one existence into a non-existence. And therein lies another determination than just gradualness, which is only a decrease or increase, and the one-sided holding fast to magnitude. 2. The ancients had already taken notice of this coincidence, that an alteration which appears to be only quantitative suddenly changes into a qualitative one, and they used popular examples to illustrate the inconsistencies that arise when such a coincidence is not understood. 2 such examples go under the familiar names of the bald and the heap. They are elenchi, that is, according to Aristotle's explanation, two ways in which one is compelled to say the opposite of what one has previously asserted. The question was put, does the plucking of one hair from someone's head or from a horse's tail produce baldness? Or does a heap cease to be a heap if one grain is removed? The expected answer can safely be conceded, for the removal amounts to a merely quantitative difference, and an insignificant one at that. And so one hair is removed, one grain, and this is repeated with only one hair and one grain being removed at each time, the answer is conceded. At last the qualitative alteration is revealed, the head or the tail is bald, the heap has vanished. In conceding the answer, it was not only the repetition that was each time forgotten, but also that the individually insignificant quantities, like the individually insignificant disbursements from a patrimony, add up, and the sum constitutes the qualitative whole. So that the end, this whole has vanished. The head is bald, the purse is empty. The embarrassment, the contradiction produced by the result, is not anything sophistic in the usual sense of the word, as if the contradiction were a pretense. The mistake is committed by the assumed interlocutor, that is, our ordinary consciousness, and that is of assuming a quantity to be only an indifferent limit, that is, of taking it in the narrowly defined sense of a quantity. But this assumption is confounded by the truth to which it is brought, namely that quantity is a moment of measure and is linked to quality. Refuted is the one-sided stubborn adherence to the abstract determinateness of quantum. Also those elenchi are therefore not anything frivolous or pedantic, but basically correct. They attest to a mind which has an interest in the phenomena that come with thinking. Quantum, when it is taken as indifferent limit, is the site from which an existence is unsuspectedly attacked and laid low. It is the cunning of the concept that it would seize on an existence from this site where its quality does not seem to come into play, and it does it so well that the aggrandizement of a state or of a patrimony, etc., which will bring about the misfortune of the state or the owner, even appears at first to be their good fortune. 3. Measure is in its immediacy an ordinary quality of a specific magnitude appropriate to it. Now there is also the distinction between the site according to which quantum is an indifferent limit that can fluctuate without the quality altering, and the other site according to which it is qualitative and specific. Both sides are the magnitude determinations of the one and the same thing, but because of the original immediacy of measure, this distinction too is to be taken as immediate, and accordingly the two sides each also have a diverse concrete existence, the concrete existence of measure, which is a site of magnitude determinate in itself, then behaves towards the concrete existence of the alterable external side by sublating the indifference of the latter. This is a specifying of measure. B. Specifying measure. First, this measure is a rule, a measure external to the mere quantum. Second, it is a specific quantity determining the external quantum. Third, the two sides, both as qualities of specific quantitative determinacy, relate to one another as one measure. A. The rule. The rule or the standard which we have just mentioned is in the first instance as a magnitude which is determinate in itself and is a unit with respect to a quantum of a particular concrete existence. This is a quantum with a concrete existence which is other than the something of the rule, is measured by the latter, that is determined as the amount of the said unit. This comparison is an external act, and the unit itself is an arbitrary magnitude which can in turn be posited as an amount, the foot as an amount of inches. But measure is not only an external rule, as a specific measure, its intrinsic nature is that it relates to its other, which is a quantum. B. Specifying measure. Measure is a specific determining of the external magnitude, that is, of the indifferent magnitude which is now posited in the measuring something by some other concrete existence in general. The something of the measure is indeed itself a quantum, but with the difference that it is the qualitative side determining the merely indifferent external quantum. It has intrinsically the side of being for other to which the fluctuation in size belongs. The immanent measuring is a quality of the something, and this something is confronted by the same quality in another something. In the latter, however, the quality is at first relative, with a measureless quantum in general as against the something determined as measuring. Inasmuch as a something has an internal measure, an alteration of the magnitude of its quality comes to it from outside, and the something does not take on the arithmetical aggregate of the alteration. Its measure reacts against it, behaves towards the aggregate as an intensive measure, and assimilates it in a way typically its own. It alters the externally imposed alteration, makes something else out of this quantum, and demonstrates through this specifying function that in this externality it is for itself. This specifically assimilated aggregate is itself a quantum which is also dependent on the other, that is, on the other aggregate which is only external to it. The specified aggregate is therefore also alterable, but is not for that reason a quantum as such, but the external quantum as specified in a constant manner. Measure thus has its determinate existence as a ratio, and its specificity is in general the exponent of this ratio. In intensive and extensive quantum, as we saw when considering these determinations, it is the same quantum which is present once in the form of intensity and again in the form of extension. In this difference, the underlying quantum does not suffer any alteration, the difference is only an external form. In the specifying measure, on the contrary, the quantum is taken in one instance in its immediate magnitude, but through the exponent of the ratio, it is taken in a second instance in another amount. The exponent which constitutes the element of specificity can appear at first to be a fixed quantum as a quotient of the ratio between the external and the qualitatively determined quantum, but it would then be nothing more than an external quantum, whereas by the exponent we are to understand here nothing but the qualitative moment itself that specifies the quantum as such. The only strictly immanent qualitative determination of the quantum is, as we saw earlier, that of the exponent, and it must be such an exponential determination which now constitutes the ratio, and which, as the internally existent determination, comes to confront the quantum as externally constituted. The principle of this quantum is the numerical one which constitutes its internal determinateness. The mode of connection of this numerical one is external, and the alteration which is determined only through the nature of the immediate quantum as such consists essentially in the addition of one such numerical one, and then another, and so forth. As the external quantum alters in arithmetical progression in this way, the specifying reaction of the qualitative nature produces another series which refers to the first, increases and decreases with it, not, however, in a ratio determined by a numerical exponent, but in a ratio which is numerically incommensurable, in the manner of a power determination. Remark. To cite an example, temperature is a quality in which these two sides of external and specified quantum are distinguished. As a quantum, the temperature is external and is also, indeed, the temperature of a body as a general medium, and it is assumed that its alteration runs on the scale of an arithmetical progression, increasing or decreasing uniformly. But in fact, the temperature is differently assimilated by the different particular bodies found at that temperature, for since these bodies determine the externally received temperature through their immanent measure, the change in temperature of any of them does not correspond in a direct ratio to that of the medium or any other among them. Different bodies compared at one and the same temperature give the numerical ratios of their specific heats of their thermal capacities, but such thermal capacities of bodies vary at diverse temperatures, and associated with the variation is the appearance of an alteration in specific shape. In the increase or the decrease of temperature, there is thus manifested a particular specification. The ratio of the temperature represented as external to the temperature of a particular body, which is at the same time dependent on the temperature, does not have a fixed ratio component. The increase or decrease of this heat does not proceed uniformly with the increase or decrease of the external heat. A temperature is being assumed here which is absolutely external, of which the alteration would be merely external or purely quantitative. But the temperature is itself the temperature of air or some other specific temperature. The ratio, therefore, if looked at more closely, would probably have to be taken not as the ratio of a merely quantitative quantum to a qualifying quantum, but of two specific quanta. And this is how the specifying ratio is now further determined. The moments of measure are not only the sides of one and the same quality, one side quantitative and the other side qualifying the quantum, but consist rather in the relation of two qualities which are in themselves measures. C. Relation of the two sides as qualities. 1. The qualitative side of the quantum, in itself determined, exists only as a reference to the external quantitative side. As specifying the latter, it is a sublating of its externality through which quantum as such is. This qualitative side thus has a quantum for the presupposition from which it starts, but this quantum is also qualitatively distinguished from quality, and this difference between the two must now be posited in the immediacy of being in general which still characterizes measure. The two sides thus stand to each other in a qualitative respect, each a qualitative existence for itself, and the one side that was at first only an internally indeterminate formal quantum is the quantum of a something and of its quality, and just as their reciprocal reference is now determined as measure in general, so too is the specific magnitude of these qualities. These qualities stand in relation to each other according to a determination of measure. This determination is their exponent, but they are already implicitly connected to each other in the being for itself of measure. The quantum is in its double being external quantum and specific quantum, so that each of the distinct quantities has this double determination in it and is at the same time inextricably interwoven with the other. It is in this way alone that the qualities are determined. They are not, therefore, a determinate being in general existing for each other, but are rather posited as indivisible, and the specific magnitude tied to them is a qualitative unity. One determination of measure in which they are implicitly bound together in accordance with their concept. Measure is thus the immanent quantitative relating of two qualities to each other. 2. In measure, we have the essential determination of variable magnitude, for measure is sublated quantum, quantum therefore no longer as that which is ought to be in order to be quantum, but quantum and as something other besides. This other is the qualitative element, and as we have established, is nothing else than the relation of powers of the quantum. In immediate measure, this variability is not yet posited. It is just one single quantum or other to which a quality is attached. In the specifying of measure, the preceding determination, which is an alteration of the merely external quantum by the qualitative moment. What is posited is the distinctness of two determinate magnitudes, and hence in general the plurality of measures in one common external quantum. And it is in this differentiation of the quantum from itself that the latter shows itself for the first time to be a real measure, for it appears as a being which is one and the same, for example the constant temperature of the medium, and at the same time of diversified and indeed quantitative existence, in the various temperatures of the bodies found in the medium. This differentiation of quantum into the diverse qualities, the different bodies, yields a further form of measure, one in which the two sides relate to each other as qualitatively determined quanta, and this can be called the realized measure. Magnitude, simply as such, is alterable, for its determinateness is a limit which at the same time is none. The alteration only affects, therefore, a particular quantum in place of which another is posited. But the genuine alteration is that of the quantum as such. Here we have the determination, interesting when so understood, of the variable magnitude of higher mathematics, in which we neither need to stop short at the formal determination of alteration or variability in general, nor introduce any other determination except the simple determination of the concept by which the other of the quantum is only the qualitative. The genuine determination, therefore, of real variable magnitude is that it is qualitative, that is, as we have sufficiently shown, that it is determined by the ratio of powers. Posited in this variable magnitude is that quantum has no value as such, but only as determined in conformity with its other, that is, qualitatively. The two sides in this relating have, in keeping with their abstract side as qualities in general, some particular meaning or other, for instance space and time. Taken at first simply as determinacies of magnitude in the ratio of measure, one of them is the amount which increases and decreases in external arithmetical progression. The other is an amount specifically determined by the other amount, which for it is the unit. If each of these two sides were only a particular quality in general, there would be no way of distinguishing which of them is to be taken with respect to their determination of magnitude as merely externally quantitative and which as varying in quantitative specification. If they are related, for instance, as root and square, it is indifferent which is regarded as increasing or decreasing in merely external arithmetical progression, and which on the contrary has its specific determination in this quantum. But the two qualities are not indeterminate in their difference, for they are the moments of measure, and the qualification of the latter ought to rest on them. The closest determinateness of the qualities themselves is, of the one, the extensive, that is, an externality within, and of the other, the intensive, that it exists in itself or is the negative as against the other. Accordingly, amount is the quantitative moment that pertains to the former, and unit the one that pertains to the latter, in simple direct ratio. The former is to be taken as the dividend and the latter as the divisor, in specifying ratio. The former as the power or the becoming other, and the latter as the root. Inasmuch as we still count here, that is, we reflect on the external quantum, which is thus the totally accidental determinateness of magnitude, which we call empirical, and accordingly also equally take the alteration as advancing in external arithmetical progression, then this falls on the side of the unit, the intensive quality. The external extensive side, by contrast, is to be represented as altering in the specific series. But the direct ratio, like velocity as such, as divided by t, is reduced here to a formal determination which has no concrete existence but belongs rather only to the abstraction of reflection. And even though in the ratio of root and square, as in s equals a t to the power of 2, the root is to be taken as an empirical quantum varying in an arithmetical progression. The other side has specified instead the higher realization of the qualification of the quantitative moment, one which would be more in keeping with the concept is this, that both sides are related in higher determinations of powers, as in s to the power of 3 equals a t to the power of 2. Remark. The discussion here regarding the connection in measure between the qualitative nature of an existence and its quantitative determination has its application in the already cited example of motion. First of all, in the fact that in velocity, as the direct ratio of traversed space and the elapsed time, the magnitude of time is taken as denominator and that of space as numerator. If velocity is as such only a ratio of the space and time of a motion, it is then indifferent which of the two moments should be considered as the numerator and which as the unit. But space, like weight in specific gravity, is an external real whole as such and hence amount. Time, like volume, is on the contrary the ideal, the negative, the site of unity. But the more important ratio, the one essential to the point at issue here, is the one that holds in free motion. In the first instance, in the still conditioned motion of a falling body, where the quantitative values of time and space are reciprocally determined as root and square respectively, and then in the absolutely free motion of the celestial bodies, where the period of revolution and the distance are reciprocally determined, the one as one power lower than the other, as square and cube respectively. Fundamental relations of this kind rests on the nature of the related qualities of space and time and on the way they stand connected. Whether their motion is mechanical, that is unfree or not determined by the concept of its moment, or is the motion of a falling body, that is conditionally free, or the absolutely free motion of the heavens. These kinds of motion, as well as their laws, rest on the development of the concept of their moments, space and time, for these qualities prove as such in themselves or in their concept to be indivisible, and their quantitative relation, the being for itself of measure, is only one measure determination. Regarding the absolute relations of measure, it should be noted that the mathematics of nature, if at all worthy of the name of science, would have to be essentially the science of measure, a science to which much has indeed been contributed empirically, but still preciously little scientifically, that is, philosophically. Mathematical principles of natural philosophy, as Newton called his work, if they are to live up to this title in a deeper sense than Newton and those of the entire Baconian lineage of philosophy did, would have to contain things of quite a different nature in order to shed some light on these regions, still dark yet eminently worthy of attention. It is a great service to discover the empirical numbers of nature, for example the distances of the planets from each other, but an infinitely greater service would be to make the empirical quanta disappear by raising them to a universal form of quantitative determinations in which they become the moments of law or of measure. Immortal services which, for instance, Galilei achieved for the motion of falling bodies and Kepler for the movement of the celestial bodies. These men have proven the laws that they have discovered by showing that the full compass of the singular things of perception conform to them. But a still higher proof of these laws must be demanded, nothing less, namely, than of knowing their quantitative determinations from the qualities or determinate concepts connected in them, such as space and time. Of this kind of proof there is still no trace in the cited mathematical principles of natural philosophy, as also there is none in subsequent works of the same kind. It has already been remarked, in connection with the semblance of mathematical proofs of certain natural relations, a semblance based on the misuse of the infinitely small. That the attempt to conduct any such proof on a truly mathematical basis, that is neither empirically nor conceptually, is an absurd undertaking. Proofs of this kind presuppose their theorems and even the laws to be proved from experience. What they manage to accomplish amounts to this, that they reduce such theorems and such laws to abstract expressions and convenient formulas. A better informed day will come when the entire and truly real merit that will be attributed to Newton in these matters as against Kepler, once the sham scaffolding of proofs has been cast aside, undoubtedly because of a clearer awareness of what mathematics can deliver and has delivered, will be restricted to Newton's set transformation of Kepler's formula and to his albeit still incipient introduction of analysis.